Time, with its infinite sense of humor, will always fold upon itself like an origami chicken. Yeah, and this moment is that chicken.
This is the Extra Hawk Rate Podcast, episode 598 for the week of January 19th, 2026. I am hirsute tic-tac-toe board David T. Cole, and I'm here with stress hormone bouncy house Sarah D. Bunting.
Red alert! Red alert!
Barefoot Chancellor Tara Ariano.
In the future, barefoot is legal.
And singing hologram Andrew Cunningham.
Now, I'm not actually getting older, I'm just programmed to look that way.
Welcome to Extra Hot. Great for another week. We welcome back Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
We missed you terribly. And of course, we welcome our special guest. He is a writer and a podcaster you have heard with us many times before. It's Andrew Cunningham.
Welcome back, Andrew.
Just every time a Star Trek thing happens, good or bad, Here I am.
Which will this be? Let's find out. We are, in fact, here to talk about Star Trek : Starfleet Academy. It's been several generations since The Burn, a multi-galactic catastrophe, the details of which are not important other than that it's a metaphor for COVID.
Your Star Trek mama's so big. When she sits around the house, she really sits around the house. Oh, Star Trek burn.
Now, as isolationist planets are internally debating opening relations and young people are daring to hope for better lives than their parents and grandparents lived through, it's the perfect time to reopen the Starfleet Academy. Admiral Charles Vance, Oded Fehr, even has the perfect chancellor in mind, Nala Ake, Holly Hunter, currently running a primary school. But 15 years ago, then-Captain Ake presided over a legal proceeding that convicted Anisha Mir, Tatiana Maslany, of being an accessory to the space equivalent of felony robbery homicide. Ake had plans to provide Anisha's 6-year-old son, Caleb, with a great education and make sure he got to visit his mother often, but Caleb heeded his mother's advice not to trust Starfleet and escaped. Ake then resigned from Starfleet in disgrace, which is why Vance thinks she will come back if he tells her Caleb is in custody for another crime and she can divert him to Starfleet Academy instead. Caleb very reluctantly goes along with the plan so he can use Starfleet resources to find Anisha, but will he possibly be enraptured by Starfleet's mission of exploration and peace? And other students go there as well. The first two episodes dropped on Paramount Plus January 15th. We got access to the first 6, but we will be careful about spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Andrew, should our listeners watch Starfleet Academy?
I think a qualified yes. If you've sat down to watch Star Trek on purpose, I promise you've seen worse Star Trek than this.
Wow. Okay. Love it.
That is qualified, Sarah.
Qualified yes for me as well.
Dave?
I like the big swing, but not a lot is clicking for me on this, so I'm going to go on the marginal no side for this one.
This, for me, is a will be in room when Dave is watching, but otherwise would not watch it by myself.
Right.
Don't care. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it. Andrew, I think that you watched more of Star Trek Discovery than the rest of us did. When the series premiere starts with narration about The Burn, how did you feel?
There was, like, I was trying to talk to somebody about this, about The Burn, and I'm like, well, for story purposes, it's just like all the fuel blew up and it destroyed the Federation and now they're rebuilding from it. But then you try to explain the story reasons for, like, why it was happening. And, like, anything with Star Trek Discovery, it just makes it sound like there's a gas leak in your house. Like, there is, like, none of it makes any sense at all.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, I think that some of the more promising stuff that's going on here is kind of continuing that, like, what does rebuilding Starfleet in the far future look like plotline from Discovery. And we just kind of yada yada the specifics of that.
Yeah. How much of this did you remember, Dave, the burn stuff?
It's fine. Like Andrew said, you know, it's a way just to sort of semi-reset the stakes and be able to sort of capture that original series sense of, oh, there is mysteries out there. Before we get more into the show, I just want to rewind for a second and say, if you were one of the people that worked on that little Star Trek 60th anniversary, whatever they call that, you know, the little bug at the start of it, I feel bad for you because Paramount Plus's compression algorithm is so bad. It totally destroyed all the work on that. Everything just looks like fuzzy static, and that wasn't the intent. So if you're out there, I see you, and you should be mad.
Yeah. Setting a Star Trek show in school feels like a bummer in the way school is a bummer, but this school does things a little differently. It is basically a ship that docks on campus in San Francisco, so sometimes it does fly around doing space stuff with the students in it learning. Sarah, is this clever enough as a workaround, or could it go further? And bear in mind, everyone knows you are now space curious because you're up to date on For All Mankind.
I think it was the best available workaround for basically, I think what they're trying to do, based on other reviews I've read, including from our esteemed colleague, Ellen Seppenwall, that after the first two episodes, they basically kind of CW-ize the story, and they're making it more of a focus on the students and their teen-esque dramas, whatever adolescence means in this future semi-space world. Mm-hmm. I did like the design of the like test ship, like the crash test dummy version of the ship that they're all on. I liked the way that showed up in the like uniform and insignia elements. I liked nods to previous properties, like the whale thing was good, or sweet at least. Mm-hmm. My issue with the show is not so much like the space part of it. It's like it tried to start out as one kind of Star Trek series, like a more Discovery or Strange New Worlds type of vibe, but then it's rolling into, like, you know, live action Lower Decks with fucking maybe at a question mark. I only watched the first two, but it did kind of feel like they started with this functionally movie about how they get back to Starfleet Academy, and then it's going to be one tree space, maybe. I don't know if anyone got further than I did and felt like there was a disconnect there.
I suspect that was an intentional ramp up, because I think you need to imbue the start with some more familiar Star Trek things before you slip into students in space.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of adoption.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The ones I've seen, they kind of ping pong back and forth a bit between doing like some Trek style, like, you know, space stuff and diplomacy and like valuing communication in the context of an institution where people are like learning about these ideals and sort of understanding the nuances of them and encountering them for the first time. Like, I think that stuff is mostly landing for me. It gets weirder when they're basically trying to do like a weird sci-fi Animal House thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
With like pranks and like different like factions inside the college.
Yeah.
I guess I'm supposed to be here for this because it's in a setting that's kind of familiar to me, but it's mostly reading like any sort of, you know, glossy teen TV show for me in those moments.
Yeah. I wonder if you took the Star Trek out of the show and it was just Space High, whether anybody would probably care. And just speaking about the transition from sort of like a more traditional Trekkie thing into the CWization of it, the one part of that I really didn't buy is Caleb Mears' constant sort of fluctuation between not liking Starfleet and being this rebel, and then like switching for half an episode where he's all rah-rah and then going back to it. Like, it almost seems like some things were filmed out of order. I wanted a better throughput to that. They made a lot of interesting quotation character choices here, more so than I think at the start of any other Star Trek series. There's a lot of characters I don't want to see anymore in this show. And some of them are because just a character is like, I don't like that. But most of those ones are the actor is making some decisions here that are really bothering me. And Holly Hunter is up there.
Ugh.
The Klingon dude is up there, who seems to be acting by trying to do a Worf impression, but not realizing that Worf actually has multitudes the way he speaks.
Yeah.
He just doesn't talk like this all the time.
Yeah, it seems like he is uncomfortable speaking. Yeah.
It's also the problem, like, the pilot has Paul Giamatti and Tatiana Maslany, and then they're gone
for
so long, where it's like, God damn it, like, don't show us what we're missing.
Giamatti is having the time of his life, though. I kind of love Paul Giamatti in this.
Delightful.
He was put on this earth to be put in weird makeup and yell no as his plans are foiled. Like, that's just, that's,
I think, just he would say exactly the same thing.
Fast forward to episode 6. This is going to be the smallest spoiler that I can deliver. He says the word
oh no.
So there you go.
Yeah, I do have to question this commitment to being like, yeah, people 800 years from now talk like people on Twitter in 2018 still. Yeah. Like, it's like you have to accept that a half Klingon hybrid would be using the phrase dumpster fire in casual conversation.
Oh, God. Yeah. Right.
How do they know what a dumpster is?
I don't know.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's like meat's back on the menu all over again. Yeah. Holly Hunter, I agree with you, Dave. I would love to know how many of Ake's several affectations were in the script and how many she added, because I already mentioned the barefoot thing, God, up top.
Yeah.
But in her quarters, she has a fucking gramophone.
Yeah.
She sits weird in every single piece of furniture she has, including like a chaise in her office, where in one episode, she's just lying on it like a piece of meat. Like, it doesn't look comfortable.
She seems like the kind of character that might pass gas in the bridge, just be like, what? It's natural. It happens.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Like,
it's space one hippie. Step away from that. Yeah.
My one and only defense of this character that I could summon up is that I believe the only other member of this race of people, the Lanthanites, that we've seen are Carol Kane's weird engineer
in Strange New Worlds. Yeah.
On Strange New Worlds. And when I'm watching her, it's just like, oh, it's just Carol Kane. Like, that's just the decisions that she's making. But I guess being like anachronistic and sort of overly casual at work are like racial characteristics that we have to put up with. So, yeah.
I guess if you're of a species that lives thousands of years, eventually you just go insane.
Is
what's happening. I liked, what did you guys think of Space Michelle Williams as Genesis?
Oh, I was glad that the girl student who's like really smart and driven isn't also just a nerd like Andrea Zuckerman. Like, she seems cool. Yeah. So I appreciated that decision. But yeah, Space Michelle Williams is not too far off.
It's true.
Love seeing the doctor back. Mm-hmm. Doctor's still the doctor. Just got gray hair now. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's one of your faves, right, Andrew?
It's because, again, of his programming. But I just like seeing Robert Picardo and stuff. It doesn't happen often enough. I feel like I saw him. He was in Dickinson in a couple episodes. I'm trying to think of things in like the last 10 years that I've seen him in. And there's like not a lot. So, yeah, he's here. He's having a good time. And he when he's given like dramatic stuff to work with instead of just like jokey, I'm the opera doctor stuff, like he does a pretty good job with it. Like he's here. He's shown up, which is nice.
One thing I don't understand about the holograms in this series, and there's two major ones, the Doctor and Sam, one of the students, first, what do they call it, photonic sentient being in Star Trek or something like that?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
What are the rules of holograms in this future? Because sometimes they pass through people and sometimes bodies. Sometimes they interact with the technology that is in the room, or they have a tricorder or something like that, or an injector in their hand and they use it. But then there are times where they cannot help, like in the first episode where all the nanites or whatever it is are covering the ship. The character I've come to call Bluey Corrigan goes out onto the hull to stop it. He has to be tractor beamed back, and it has to be tractor beamed from a particular part of the ship because that's where the controls are. In the scene previous to that, the doctor is zipping in and out of his existence in order to use objects. Why couldn't he just zip over to the correct console and press a button, and that guy wouldn't be quite so cold when he finally got back into the ship? There's some show Bible rules either I don't have a full understanding of, or they are just yada yadaing. But that was pretty obvious to me as sort of a mistake in the first couple.
Yeah. And it's not like this entire set of franchises isn't used to hand waving shit like that. It was like, well, in this tachyons. Particular force field of, you know, blah, blah, tritium safety cell that you're like, what? Okay. But thank you at least for addressing it, even though you're full of shit. Like, at least you acknowledged that, you know, the dorks on the couch would be like, well, actually, what about? Because that was like a whole thing where someone's arm passed through Sam's arm.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden they're just people, which is like, we understand that we're watching a television program, but decide what it is and give us one line about what it is and then mm-hmm. try to stick to it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Do you think Stephen Colbert's narrator character was conceived as radar in space?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And does it seem like that was part of the script or this was just 11th hour punch up? Because it really felt tacked on to me, all those little moments.
It takes a long time before we hear any jokes, so maybe.
Yeah. Also, the more of this corporate universe's money they can just give him for doing bullshit, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Where do we put this in the rankings of Paramount Plus era Trek shows? Like between X and Y, Andrew?
Ooh, that's rough. Above the Section 31 movie. That one's
oh, God. Oh. Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Bold.
I think based on what I've seen so far, it's better than Swaths of Discovery. It's better than the first two seasons of Picard. Mm. But beyond that, I feel like more study is needed. Like, I definitely think it's starting off on a better foot than some of them have started. And no Star Trek show's first season is its best season. Like,
yeah.
Not throughout the whole history of time. Has that been true? Mm-hmm. So I'm willing to give it some time to like find itself. But yeah, it starts out better than the worst of it, but not clearly head and shoulders above anything else. I don't think.
Andrew, you said that you got to episode 4 before we had to record. I'd be interested to see after you watch episode 5. How much you enjoyed that, because that is the fan service episode of the initial batch. And I won't go into what exactly they're doing, but it was DNA engineered to spice up your Star Trek neurons.
Yeah, that's the one that's written by Tawny Newsom, who voiced Mariner in Lower Decks.
Ah, sure. Okay.
And she appears in it as well. And not as Mariner. It's a different character. Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, I didn't give Lower Decks a benefit of the doubt when I heard the concept and everything, but turns out that's one of the best Star Trek series to come out of the Paramount Plus era. Yeah, so I was ready to give this one a fair shake. And I don't think it's bad. I just feel like there's not enough oomph there yet. And a lot of the characterizations are still sort of that season one Dungeons and Dragons day one character sheet where you have to make sure all the characters are very, very different from each other and nobody shares any statistical strengths. That gets the edges get worn away on those. So hopefully as we move on, we'll get better results with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, it's helpful to remember that the second ever episode of Next Generation, which everybody like universally loves now and has nothing bad to say about, was just them saying, let's go back to the original series and do the one where everyone gets a horny virus again. Let's just do that. Let's just redo that one as our second episode.
Mm-hmm. And that may be this too. I would put this well ahead of Picard, and I haven't really tried Discovery because I'm like, should I? And everyone's like, no, that's not going to be for you. Mm-hmm. Not as for me so far as Strange New Worlds, but I think that we just need more data. So I'll stick with it, but it's like, it's feeling inessential right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I would put Lower Decks first, then Strange New Worlds, and then a big lot of space, and then this. But I would sooner watch this than more Discovery or Picard for sure. So I might just like dip back in season 2 and see if it's sort of settled down.
I think that's a good call.
Yeah. I, as a closing statement, want to bring this to the table. At the end of the first episode, they get to San Francisco in their ship, and there is a musical choice there, which I found bewildering.
Oh.
But I'm asking you, would it be the greatest moment in television history if the seat of Starfleet government was in Kokomo?
But then is it also the same slowed down?
Yeah.
Mournful.
It's Rufus Rainwhite. Rain White singing Kokomo. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think he would. Okay. I can see that for him, honestly.
I think that would please the Lord, in my opinion.
All right, before I move on, one thing. Why is there so many people still wearing glasses in the future? It doesn't make any sense. We already fixed that problem way back in Star Trek 2. Thank you very much. And we'll not be
doing. I'm so sad to say that you agree with William Shatner about this. So you are officially weird 86 whatever year old man.
Did he tweet something about that?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Oh, that's not bad company.
I mean, canonically, in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Captain Kirk is allergic to the eye medicine that you take to so you don't wear glasses.
That's right. Do you remember what the eye medicine's called? It's like Retinox 5 or something?
Retinox 5, yeah.
Sure.
I love Wrath of Khan. Wrath of Khan will always be my favorite Star Trek thing.
That is why I keep getting these emails. Because I can just like...
All right, moving on.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
All right, we move on from the Johnny Rockets Bridge of the Athena to Around the Dial, First Stop, Always Tara.
Yeah, speaking of Kokomo, Kokomo, Indiana comes up in the first episode of this show that we watched this weekend called Ponies. In espionage, POIs are persons of interest. PONIs are persons of no interest. And that officially describes B. Grant, played by Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones, and Twyla Hasbeck, played by Haley Lou Richardson. They are two women whose husbands are CIA field agents stationed in Moscow. B and Twyla meet by chance in a market on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, 1976, and then they are brought together again by Station Chief Dane Walter, Adrian Lester, later that night so he can tell them both of their husbands have been killed in a plane crash. The women are sent back to America, but they quickly convince Langley to return them to Moscow, keeping embassy secretary jobs as covers, but actually being sent on missions to find out the truth of what happened to their husbands because they do not believe the cover story. And spoiler, they're right not to. The show was created by Susanna Fogel, who wrote the screenplay for Booksmart. But more relevantly, she also wrote The Spy Who Dumped Me, the failed pilot of Washingtoni Yen, based on the blog from the aughts. And Winner, the film dramatization of the reality Winner story that did not star Sydney Sweeney. It stars Emilia Jones from Coda and Task. So the tradecraft does feel like it was deeply researched, and you also buy that these are two women who are being underestimated as a couple of bimbos who are much smarter and more resourceful than anyone is giving them credit for. Clark is the one whose character is supposed to be a practiced, if not native, Russian speaker. Her grandmother, Manya, who is played by Harriet Walter, is a Jew from Belarus who survived the camps and moved to America. And obviously, I don't know if Clark's accent is good. She seems confident, though. And Haley Lou Richardson is playing the Haley Lou Richardson part, meaning she is chaotic but adorable. She gets to wear a lot of great vintage t-shirts. I won't spoil, but I want to buy all of them. And their work puts them in the paths of a lot of very hot people, including some fully naked ones in a dead drop at a Russian bath. And I know your question is, do you see Hogg? You sure do. There is not much more to say about this without spoiling the story, but if you miss a period spy show since the Americans ended and you're okay with one that is a lot more arch in the slow horses mold and also passes the Bechdel test, the whole season is on Peacock. We watched almost all of it, spending all Sunday in bed under our warmest, squishiest covers, and I hope they make more because it was fun. Dave, you watched this
as well. I really enjoyed this show, and if you are doing a spy show, and I guess Slow Horses does this for the most part, it is much more interesting if it's pre-digital, if it's
for
like
sure,
the information systems are not really there. And Slow Horses gets away with it because they're underfunded, whereas this one's obviously everything is still analog and we're dealing with like secret radios and car doors and that sort of stuff. And that makes it way more fun. Same thing with the Americans, you know, they had to deal with spirit gum and all that sort of stuff. They just couldn't hack somebody's phone and get the information that way. They had to social engineer it. And a lot of it is that here. The set decoration, whatever, the scouting, it's all on point. It looks great. It's set in 77, I think, when we start.
It's Christmas Eve 76. So okay. Most of it takes place in 77.
Yeah. So it's retro, but it's also a place you're not super familiar with, or, you know, it's set in Moscow. So I don't know. I just love the art direction in this a lot. They do have those credits that I am getting sick of, where it's just like a whole bunch of shit from the show, divorced from anything that's actually happening in the show, like tape recorders that turn into secret doodads and stuff like that. But beyond that, I really enjoyed it. Probably going to make my year-end list of shows. Yeah, it was great. Sarah, I think you would enjoy it.
You would love it, Sarah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. It's going on the list at the top.
Excellent. And for my plug... I wrote about Justin Theroux, business sicko, in GQ, and you can find that in the show notes.
All right, let's check in with Andrew. What do you got for us?
I am doing some, over the holiday break, I started doing some, home improvement projects, which means it's time to put on some TV that I only need to, half pay attention to.
Yep, we love
it. So I caught up on three sort of middle-brow TV shows that I've watched on and off. Speaking of The Americans, we've got Netflix's The Diplomat, which has Keri Russell in it. She and many other attractive and charismatic people do very stupid things on this show. And it's one of those that is just barely, it's like trying to parody the geopolitical situation in the world a little bit, but it's just barely outlandish enough to keep pace with reality. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they continue to one up that next season. Invincible, the Amazon animated superhero show, which I think is in season three, or just season three is the most recently aired one. Yep. Still gross, still occasionally a bummer or a slog, but more fun than not. This is the show that does the thing the Venture Brothers did the best, which is invent a weird one-off villain or hero based around one stupid name, and then you just and then you just drill it into the ground. Yep. And then ABC's High Potential, which is the crime procedural with Caitlin Olsen from Always Sunny in it. As a one's a weirdo, one's a cop, they solve crimes type show. I think that when the weirdo is just really smart and has a good memory, I feel like that's the least interesting version of the premise you can do. And I think that Elsbeth is also playing in that sandbox right now. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed her on it. It's mostly as fun as they say. It's a reliable show. I would watch 12 seasons of 24 episodes each of this, and I would be happy about it. And then in terms of plugs, the TV podcast I've done has been defunct for some time, but on my book podcast, Overdue, in February, we are going to be reading the book Heated Rivalry by Rachel Reed, hopping on that gay Canadian hockey train. Mm-hmm. Just as the caboose, I think, is leaving the station,
as it were,
discourse wise. Yeah. But yeah, that's what's up with me.
I mean, you got to do it. It's the last monoculture thing that exists, I think. I don't know anyone who isn't aware of it.
Yeah. Listen, you got to grab onto that SEO when you can get it. Yeah.
That's right.
Sarity Bunting, she's back and she's got something for us.
She is, and she does. I had big plans for tackling the aforementioned capital L list over the break. As you've probably inferred by recent absences, this did not work out like I hoped totally, although I did manage to get my husband Dan jumped in on both the pit and the lowdown, so I'm going to take those W's and move on. I also knocked off a couple of enjoyable rewatches, Justice for Primo and Dash and Lily, while I'm up. And my topic today, the all-important work of sampling a veteran of the list and bailing on it after two or three episodes, namely Shining Vale.
I don't know how this got on your list, to be honest. I was really shocked to see it in the doc.
You are to blame. Please hold for more details.
All right, sorry.
Well, not to blame. I'll get into it. Shining Vale was a satirical horror comedy series. It dropped on Starz in 2022 and ran for two seasons. It was created by Jeff Astroff, who also created Trial and Error and Stumble, which we've talked about a little bit around here recently, or Tara has, and Sharon Horgan of Divorce and Catastrophe. I dimly recall T-Bone telling me she thought this was one of those shows that would just miss being for me and as a result be a real, bee in the shorts. And that was right on. It's 100% one of those so near and yet so far deals. And I happened to look up from knitting something to see Horgan in the credits, and I was like, oh, that's why I don't like this. I just don't enjoy Horgan content ever. I'm giving this two episodes and I'm bailing. But like the other Horganiana that I've walked away from in the past with no regrets, it's not bad. I see what it's trying to do. But Shining Vale, to me, tried to split the difference in a way that didn't work for me between either going full Zucker Abrams with the surrealist elements or dialing certain aspects like the shitty kids and the utter ill-suitedness of this couple for each other. They needed to bring that down 40 notches. I did like Courtney Cox and Greg Kinnear in it. I just could not buy that they would even know each other, much less trying to be working out their marriage at a haunted house upstate. And there's just too much other TV. With one exception, I would die for their dog, Roxy. She's very cute. For my plug, Tara and Dave, thanks for everything. Always.
Hey.
For covering for me.
Product. Hey. We're product. Finally, it's happening.
It's true. You are. I'm putting you on a lunchbox. And, you know, you hear them here, but listen to Sassy. Also, good times. Thank you. Thank you to Adam Grossworth and Carrie Race, who have been sitting in for me recently. We will link other projects in the show notes. But as always, it is a privilege. You could not ask for better friends and partners, so I shan't. But speaking of mutual aid, if you would like to help orgs of that nature in the Twin Cities, we will link to a vetted list of those in the show notes as well, because not everybody can have a Tara and Dave on hand, and Minnesota could use a boost. So look to the show notes for that.
All right, one thing I forgot to talk about Star Trek Starfleet Academy, and I can't leave it on the table, is we were talking about that goofy song at the end of episode one, all hippy-dippy and touchy-feely and all that stuff. It just occurs to me, the scene that immediately precedes it is the shields going down on the enemy ship that had covered the Athena in goo, and they immediately destroy it as soon as they're able to. So we're getting a little mixed messages here at the end of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. All right, coming up here on Extra, Extra Hot Great this Friday for our club members, we're going to be talking about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Seems like a really big job, if you ask me. I would say just choose one and do your best there. That is available to club members. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club for more info and to join if you haven't. The only way to get that Drunk Dave episode is to be in the club. And then come back here, EHG Prime, next week. We'll be talking about Memory of a Killer with a guest to be determined. Who will it be?
Things fell through the cracks. I forgot to do some things that I was supposed to have done to prepare for this week. Oops, but it will be someone great. And that is the new Patrick Dempsey serial killer who has Alzheimer's drama.
And he kills people?
Yep.
All right. I would like to call him Mick Screamy.
Hey!
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Tara.
Hello. In case there's anyone listening who has not watched What We Do in the Shadows and was not paying attention, any of the other many times we've talked about it, this is the FX series that is a sequel to the 2014 mockumentary film of the same name. Like the movie, it revolves around a group of vampire housemates, whereas the movie was set in Wellington, New Zealand. The show is set on Staten Island, New York, presumably a place where residents will wink at antisocial activities, in this case by vampires. We are here to talk about season 4, episode 6, titled The Wedding. Here's why I think it should be inducted into the canon. Number one, it pays off a plot point from much earlier in the season. The fourth season starts with several housemates returning from international travel, including Nandor, who suddenly wants to get married. This is a very timely decision since Guillermo has been thinking about giving up his unpaid work as Nandor's human familiar, but he can't leave before he gets to be Nandor's best man. Nandor then finds a lamp among his many treasures. It contains a djinn, played by Anoop Desai, who grants Nandor 52 wishes. And Nandor spends the next several episodes making wishes both big and small. Yes, the djinn can resurrect Nandor's 37 dead wives so Nandor can pick the one he likes best. Yes, the djinn can also close Nandor's coffin when he doesn't really feel like reaching up for the handle, but should he? Probably not. Eventually, Nandor chooses Marwa among his former wives to remarry. And in episode 6, The Wedding, it is time for the wedding. And like so many before him who have ever planned a wedding, Nandor is micromanaging every element of the event while also harboring paranoid delusions about people around him sabotaging it. Clip one.
No one is against you or you getting married.
Don't be so naive, my little friend. Conspiracy is abound. Ask the djinn. He will tell you.
Do you wish to know if conspiracy is abound?
No. Stop trying to trick me into using up all my wishes.
You're just not thinking straight, Master. Maybe it's because you haven't slept in a week. Nandor is so hyper-focused on having the perfect wedding, he doesn't even slumber anymore. He just lies awake all day, thinking of more things to make the wedding even more perfect. More things. More. More.
Maybe you are the one who is not thinking straight because you have not slept in a week.
Yeah, no, I'm awake. I'm awake. I was just, my eyes are just a little, just, what are we talking about? Yeah, no, it's true. I haven't slept in a week, but I guess that's what it's like to be the best man to a vampire who's absolutely losing his fucking mind because he wants to have the perfect fucking wedding!
What you can't see is Guillermo totally passed out in the interview zone and getting poked by the boom mic to wake him up and then pounding Red Bulls. So when Marwa says she might like to have different flowers than the ones Nandor has already chosen, Nandor spins out that even the bride is trying to ruin the wedding and he has to be reined in, clip two.
With all due respect, you are being a real bridezilla.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's like a combination of a bride and a Godzilla.
What is a Godzilla?
Okay, I think we're getting a little bit off topic.
It's a giant lizard creature that destroys cities.
You were saying?
Nandor, if you want these impossible things, then you're going to have to use your wishes.
Okay, fine! I wish for Baron Afanas to be returned to his original non-burned-up, non-just-a-torso form.
It is done.
I wish for a live dodo bird that we will slaughter and roast and feed to the Wraith waitstaff.
It is done.
And while we're at it, I wish that Marwa would like all the same things that I like.
It is done.
And I wish
for him... sorry, but you've used up all your wishes now.
What?
Well, it's been,
yes, yeah. Happy now?
I just got everything I wanted out of this, so... Mm. Yeah, big smile.
Okay, I wish we wanted to get the fuck out of my bedroom.
I can't do that.
That was the dodo. So when the wedding actually begins, it seems like Nandor is right, but not for the reasons he thinks. At the point in the ceremony when the officiant goes through the formality of asking if anyone objects, Marwa's mother does. Nadia also objects. She thinks Nandor mostly wants a wedding, not really to be married to Marwa. And 1 hour later, a line has formed behind a microphone in the aisle for everyone to share their objections. Clip three.
Hello, my name is Derek.
Who invited this guy?
I'm just a bit bummed. These two can find love and get married, but I can't find one chill bud to have a bull sesh with.
I only very recently became aware that vampires are real, which, by the way, doesn't freak me out at all. It got me to thinking, everlasting life. You know, that's a long time. Long time to be with another person. You like her right now, but...
Marwa. I just want to say that I think it's a little rude that you haven't stopped by my house. You're new to the neighborhood. You haven't bought any, like, cookies or anything. That's what people do.
Nope, sorry. We do not validate. Once again, for the last time, please do not get in line to ask if we validate.
Get on with it.
But apparently, once everyone has not held their peace, they are fine enjoying Nandor's hospitality. Hypnotized human neighbor Sean chats with a wraith at the buffet line. The djinn's wedding gift for Nandor is a smaller lamp containing only 3 wishes, and no, he can't use one to ask for thousands more wishes. Naturally, Nadia and Laszlo have prepared a number, clip 4.
It's going to be a wedding in the dark. It's going to be a marriage, and everyone will ask.
Who will come first on the wedding night? The wedding.
Retroactive warning, if you're listening in the car with your kids, turn it off now. Oops, sorry. We learn at the reception that contrary to the Baron's assumption, Nandor is not sure he's going to turn Marwa into a vampire so that they can stay together forever. So even though this has been both a magical night and the culmination of the previous 5 episodes worth of Nandor's story, it also teases twists for the back half of the season, including that wishing for a bride who likes all the same things Nandor likes is not going to be as great as he assumes it will. Number 2, it shows us what human and vampire nuptials have in common. All of us here on the call are married, and I'm guessing some of us in the process of planning our weddings probably had to compromise on something that felt as important to us as serving dodo does to Nandor. Maybe we didn't get as mad about it as Nandor does when Guillermo dares to suggest substituting turkey, but then again, maybe we did. Like Guillermo does, somewhere in our orbit may still be holding a grudge about all the Red Bull they had to suck down to make our wedding days magical. And probably none of us was in the position to use one of our djinn wishes to bring back dead family members to attend the wedding. But even so, maybe this feels familiar. Clip 5.
I wish for you to bring Mawa's parents back to life for the wedding.
And you want them to speak English?
Sure, why not?
And you want to bring them back to life permanently? Or
just for the weekend is fine.
It is done.
Husband of
yours. On second thoughts, maybe an early departure on Sunday after brunch.
We may only remember the best parts of our own weddings, but this episode reminds us weddings are hard. We should all give Nandor whatever the equivalent is to grace that is available to hellbound undead ghouls. Number three, speaking of which, this episode affirms the love between Nandor and Guillermo. What form does their love take? That's the question of the series, of course. But despite complaining about Nandor's demands a lot, Guillermo fulfills as many of them as he can and promises in the moments before the ceremony that even if Nandor changes his mind about marriage, Guillermo will support him. And Nandor tells Guillermo he is Nandor's best man. Look, this dynamic is not healthy, but it is what works for them for now. Number four, the unclippable makeover montage. When Nadia and the guide decide to pitch in on the wedding by securing the Baron's participation as the officiant, we get a montage of makeovers, costume changes, kooky poses, the head, torso, and one arm of the pre-revitalized Baron doing sight gags on clothing racks or the back of his life partner, the sire, observers giving thumbs up or down. All of this is purely visual, so listeners will have to take my word for it. And not to be a bitch, but Silent with the Hall & Oates hit You Make My Dreams Come True playing over her capering is the best the guide has ever been on the show. Sorry, but it's true. And the montage coincidentally ends in a giggly cuddle puddle, not unlike the one in the poster for Starfleet Academy, which I it's not planned, but it did work out. And number five, we hardly hear about the fucking nightclub at all. I love the show, but one of its consistent issues is that virtually all of Nadia's multi-episode storylines have one episode's worth of juice in them. Season four's, which finds Nadia and the guide opening a vampire nightclub, is no exception. That the wedding takes up so much oxygen that there's no need to service the nightclub plotline, except for a very perfunctory reference, is a big plus for a season four episode. On top of way too many good gags to list, the wedding also includes a reminder about Laszlo's favorite home renovation show, Go Flip Yourself, ahead of this season's imminent departure episode. It establishes the wish that will, spoiler, eventually lead to the end of Nandor and Marwa's relationship. And it sets up the season finale cliffhanger with Derek, including a shot of Derek at his convenience store job, standing in front of a beautiful rack of OTC Canadian drugs like Gravol and Neocitron. Yes, I saw them. Yes, we missed them. A solid joke-a-thon that is also critical to the structure of the whole season. Only someone who is plotting against Nandor could deny the wedding induction into the canon.
Thank you, Tara. Andrew, you picked this from our list. Why don't you take first crack?
I have trouble thinking of individual episodes of the show a lot of the time for some of the same reasons Tara mentioned. Like this is the sort of culmination of a few plot lines, but then it's ramping up into several other ones. Just the show, especially as it goes on, I think becomes more and more structured around like season long or multi-episode arcs. Like just in this episode, you've got, you know, the bored djinn, you've got a glimpse of Colin Robinson as a weird little baby man. You've got Nandor wanting to get married in the first place. Like, I did remember all of these things once I was in the episode, but yeah, I needed a minute to sort of find my moorings. But it does capture a whole bunch of threads that make the show special. It's, you know, it's got lots of Nandor and Guillermo's barely submerged affection for each other. It's got a large and ridiculous cast of recurring characters. It's got a strong commitment to mutual orgasm. And it's got, of course, just enough of the gang's normie, hey, I'm walking here, neighbors, Sean and Charmaine, to keep me satisfied. So yeah, between all of that and the unforgettable wedding reception banger, I really like this one, and I was happy to watch it again.
All right, thank you, Andrew. Sarah?
I also really enjoyed this. The makeover montage was kind of, you know, in this historically visual medium of podcasting. Tara, you did a great job describing it. They really color to the very edges of the paper, which is what this show at its best, I think, is really gifted at doing. And the fact that the demon, like when he's just like a torso and one arm and a head hanging out on the couch, but he still has one of their just like florid Victorian rings on that is like new and shiny. And it's that kind of detail that Nandor's wedding list or wish list involved like stallions and a wedding cake, and wedding is spelled incorrectly, that he wouldn't have known what Godzilla is, and just lines being jumped like, since when? 1681! Just made me made me laugh. You know, all the Dodo content, of course, I was enjoying. But there's a, I too object. The fuck? That was like just perfectly done. Should just be like a GIF that we all carry around in our hearts. Mostly it's the complete commitment to and filling the frame with the idea, and that weddings, there's like so much here, and you have to wonder how much got cut, mm-hmm. that they just didn't have room for it, or like, what is this hybrid open mic episode of Donahue idea of the objections at this wedding? You know, that means that you're going to lose some things, but I mean, like, someone gets a dick drawn on their forehead, and there's a jazz combo. Like, I just love that after all the stressing about the details of this wedding, it's like this completely average, like, stereotypical fancy restaurant on an Aaron Spelling show with like a piano guy, that jazz combo. And mm-hmm. then the couples who are dancing, who like clearly thought about their choreo. Yeah, very enjoyable episode, not just to watch and laugh, but also to think about how it must have been built, mm-hmm. and to appreciate how dense it is, and what a rich document it is, including a like animatronic dodo, I guess, is a thing that got built for this. It is probably in a warehouse on Staten Island. Bless. Dave.
There are two things about this episode that I really enjoyed. One is the makeover segment. Really funny. Just the right amount, moves very quickly, and the visual gags were great. The other, of course, is the song. And it's mm-hmm. been in my head ever since we watched it, and I don't know when it's going to be purged, because like in my quiet moments with my own thoughts, that's what bubbles up to fill the void. So it's going to be a weird week until we find something else. That said, this is not my favorite episode. I didn't really think the jokes beyond those two things were like grade A. So the spaces in between those two really great moments didn't really do it for me. And the other weird thing about this episode, nobody's talking about it, but I didn't really like the Nandor stealing his bride's agency wish. I thought that was kind of creepy. And I don't know if that was fully his intent, but it kind of was when he says that she will like all the same things I like. So there's a part two to this wedding storyline, and that gets resolved, I suppose. But that sort of rubbed me the wrong way too. So this one, not the greatest for me, but certainly if you watch it, there will be at least two really excellent parts. Let's put this to the vote. Andrew, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
Yes, it is, I think.
Sarity Bunting.
I do.
And I'm going to say no, but it doesn't matter because that is 2-1. So... that means What We Do in the Shadows, Season 4, Episode 6, The Wedding. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
Yes, I do. It is pioneering serial criminal profiler Anne Burgess. She has inspired, on top of Mindhunter, RIP, she's inspired a drama pilot ordered at NBC. I'm kind of hoping it ends up somewhere that might be a little more creative and elastic with the idea. She's a fascinating figure, and maybe Anna Torv can play her again, or version of her. That'd be nice. Sop to the fans.
And loser of the week, Tara.
Matthew McConaughey showed up on our list of potential losers twice, so we're going to talk about both of those first. After having no problem endorsing AI in a 2025 Super Bowl commercial for Salesforce, McConaughey is now trademarking the phrase, all right, all right, all right, in order to combat AI misuse. And in an interview with Woody Harrelson last week, we heard that McConaughey was so up his own ass method acting that he managed to be too annoying on the set of True Detective for Woody Harrelson, one of our most annoying celebrities. So that takes some doing.
I think you could skirt around it by doubling the all right. So you do six. And then you're like, I'm double McConaughey.
Right. Yeah, maybe. Or you could be like, all right. Like, just very quietly with this, the extra all rights.
Yeah.
I feel like one is fair use.
All right. Well, speaking about stepping over people to get what you want, do you know what time it is? We're back in the studio now, but we haven't been for a bit. So it took a little while to figure out what was our last regulation game and extract the scores. So I am happy to report this is the fourth game time of the season. The scores are Tara with 3. Everybody else looking to get on the board.
Jesus.
Yep.
Wow. No pressure.
Today we are playing Thou Shall Guess the Title from Mr. Dan Casino.
Damn you, Casino!
Who earns a extra credit topic, ka-ching, and of course a free shirt from our store at throughmethods.com. This one, everybody's going to play, so that's exciting. I'm going to give you the description of a show from a religious broadcast network. You have to pick the name of the show from three options or decide that Dan made it up. So you're going to have A, B, C, and D options, D always being for Dan. I'm going to ask everybody to lock in with their choice, and then we'll see their answers and give points out. Those points are 1 for correctly identifying the actual title, or 2 correctly identifying that it is, in fact, a casino creation. We don't need Picky today because we really have no order, so get out of here, Picky. Enjoy your vacation. 21 questions. We'll see about the equalizer zone when we hit it. Time pending. Are we ready to play Thou Shall Guess the Title?
Yes, and I have a late breaking update. The aforementioned Dan Casino will be our guest when we talk about Memory of a Killer next week.
Woo! Fantastic. Thank you, Dan. All right. I'm going to read you the synopsis of the show and your options. And I want you all to lock in. Here we go. Show number 1. Animated series following David's adventure as a shepherd prior to meeting his destiny as a warrior and king. 5 episodes on a network called Minnow. M-I-N-N-O. Your options are A, God's Shepherd, B, The Awesomely Inspiring Adventures of David, C, Young David, or D, Dan Made This Up. I'm going to ask everybody to give it a think and then raise your hands on Zoom for me when you are locked in to your answer. All right, we're going to start with Tara. Tara, what is your answer here?
It seems blah, but I'm going to say C, Young David.
Sarah.
It seems really over the top, but that's Jesus-y networks for you. So I'm going to go with B, Awesomely Inspiring Adventures.
And Andrew.
I am also locked into B.
All right. So here is your correct answer. It is not A. It is not The Awesomely Inspiring Adventures of David, unfortunately. Our correct answer is C, Just Boring Old Young David.
Woo!
So Tara gets 1 point to start us off. All right. Show number 2. Sitcom that follows a girl with a vlog and her friends as they try to find biblical solutions for problems faced by real teens. 8 episodes on Minnow. Is that show called A, Casey on the Case, B, Doc Connor, Webtective, C, Hattie Mel on the Web, or D, of course, Dan Made This Up? Tara is locked in, lickety split. Andrew's locked in, but I think he was trying to pick between two there. And Sarah D. Bunting's locked
reluctantly.
In. Reluctantly. Sarah D. Bunting, what is your answer here?
My answer is I hate Dan, and it's D.
Dan made this up. All right. If you are correct, you will get 2 points. Andrew.
I also have D.
Okay. And
same here.
Tara. Everybody think D. 2 points on the line. It is not D.
Oh, no.
It is not Casey on the Case. It is not Hattie Mel on the Web. It is Doc Connor, Webtective.
Wow. Webtective?
Webtective.
Everything.
God.
Show number 3. Animated series in which a modern boy discovers a group of rodents who have been magically preserved for 2,000 years. Mm-mm. The rodents teach the boy about the life of Christ, which they witnessed to help him through mild adventures. 10 episodes on Minnow.
Mild adventures.
This show is called A, The Bible Beavers. B, The Dead Sea Squirrels.
No, oh, that's too good.
C, The Good News Groundhogs. Or D, Dan Made That Up. Tara's locked in. Sarah's locked in. Andrew's locked in. Let's start with Andrew. What's your answer here?
I'm gonna say A. I'm tempted to say D, but I'm saying A.
Bible Beavers. Tara.
I think I'm gonna try it again. I think Dan made this up because magically preserved feels too science-y for Minnow.
That is magically spiritual.
Even so.
We'll see. Sarah.
Dead Sea Squirrels is the kind of thing that Dan would make up. Really, but I think Dan made all of it up. So D again.
All right. We've got D's and A's. It is not the Bible Beavers. It is not the Good News Groundhogs. It is not Dan Made This Up.
No!
The show we're looking for is the Dead Sea Squirrels.
Okay, I have a theory, which is that Dan came across the title The Dead Sea Squirrels at some point in his travels and was like...
And retro-engineered the entire game.
M.O. for sure.
Cosign.
Show number 4. It is a procedural about a deaf FBI agent who uses her hearing ear dog Levi and her ability to lip read to solve crimes other agents can't. Based, it claims, on a true story. 56 episodes on Redeem TV. Is that show called A, Hear No Evil, B, Silent Witness, C, Sue Thomas FBI, I is spelt like the eyeball, or D, Dan Made This Up? Sarah immediately locks in.
Not confident at all, by the way.
Andrew locks in. Tara locks in. All right, Tara, what do you got?
A. I'm not confident, though.
Hear No Evil. Sarah?
Yeah. A. Equal amounts of confidence to Tara.
And Andrew?
And yes, A. And low confidence.
All right. Everybody says, hey, guess what, guys? You're all wrong.
Oh, man.
It is not A. It is not B, Silent Witness. Dan did not make this up. This is Sue Thomas FBI, show...
That's a Christian show?
It is on a Christian network. I said these weren't all Christian shows. Okay, there are some of family value feel goods.
I thought that was a misdirect because I do know that show is real.
The only title that I recognize from this whole game was
Canadian.
That one.
Yeah, it's Canadian.
Yeah. Show number 5 is an anthology series in which a wild horse comes into the lives of various ranch families living in what seems like modern Canada, but no one has a cell phone or drives a recent car. Anyways, this horse, who might be an angel or something, helps them fix their lives before leaving for the next family. 30 episodes on Great American Family. This sounds like a ripoff of Littlest Hobo with a Horse.
I was going to say it sounds like a ripoff of the Secret Horse episode of Close Enough that we talked about last year.
Yep. Is this show called A Horse Called Faith, or B, Diamond, or C, The Legend of Wildfire, or D, Dan Made This Up? All right. Tara and Andrew are locked in. Sarah's locked in. Sarah, what is the answer here?
Let's see.
Legend of Wildfire. Andrew.
A for this.
A, Horse Called Faith. And Tara.
I can't believe I'm trying this again, but I'm going to say D, Dan Made This
Up. Dan Made This Up. It's got to work at some point. And this is that point. Yay! Dan made that show
nice job.
Up. That is worth 2 points, Tara. Two points.
Considered it, but
the ones that have been real so far have been too outlandish.
All right, here's your 6. A spinoff of When Calls the Heart, focusing on separate orphan siblings who reunite as adults. 18 episodes on Great American Family. Is that show called The Hope Heart Calls? When Calls the Heart, : Hope's Story. C, When Hope Calls, or D, Dan Made It Up. So once again, that's A, The Hope Heart Calls, B, When Calls the Heart, : Hope's Story, or C, When Hope Calls, of course, D, always there for you. Dan made it up. All right, it is Andrew to pick first. Everybody's locked in. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with B for this one.
All right, B, When Calls a Heart, colon, Hope's Story. Tara?
Me as well, B.
And Sarah?
Yep, a third for B.
Wow, everybody's in sync and everybody is incorrect.
Man.
Dan did not make this up. It is When Hope Calls. When Hope Calls.
Okay.
All right, show number 7. Hannah inherits her uncle's ranch, which winds up being threatened by rustlers.
No!
Good thing there's a hunky Mountie to help her out. 6 episodes on Great American Pure Flix. Pure Flix. Is this show called A, Brookfield, When a Hope Story... God. Let me do that again. A, Brookfield, When a Hope Calls Story. B, Hidden Valley Ranch. C, Wide River Valley. Or D, Dan Made It Up.
Hate this game and Dan and the Lord.
Everybody's locked in.
I reject God because of this quiz.
Don't do that.
We got
a lot of game to get through and I don't want to be smote. All right, Tara.
Would they do a spin? Anyway, all right.
You said you were locked in. Let's hear the answer.
C.
This is why one of these days you're going to have to use cards because I don't trust you anymore.
Yeah, okay.
So. All right. Sarah.
I was going to say C, but now I think Dan made this shit up.
All right. 11th hour change to D and Andrew.
D as well.
All right. Nobody got it right. It is not Hidden Valley Ranch, I think, obviously. It is not Wide River Valley. Dan did not make this up. This is Brookfield, When a Hope Calls Story.
No, A, When Hope Calls Story.
A, When Hope Calls Story.
I can't... A spinoff of a spinoff? Honest to God.
Nobody beats The Wiz. Like, what are we even doing here? Great American.
Show number 8.
Pup Dent.
Show number 8, guys. Buckle in. This is a hybrid puppet and live action series about the adventures of a curious unicorn and his dinosaur friends as they learn about God's love. Mm. God, of course, is voiced by Dean Cain. Mm. 13 episodes on Great American Pure Flix. Is this...
Tara's
already locked in.
Before I even hear the answer.
Okay. A, Ark Encounters the Series. B, Lessons from the Garden. C, I Know a Guy. Or D, Dan made this up. All right, let's start things off with Sarah once we're all locked in. Sarah's thinking.
I'm going to stick even though one of those answers, once I heard it, was tempting.
Okay.
She's locked in. All right, Sarah, what's your answer?
A,
Ark Encounters the Series. Andrew?
Gonna go with C.
I Know a Guy.
I'm a limb.
All right, and Tara, sticking with D.
Yes,
sticking with D. Dan made that up. Oh,
I have no points. Does anyone have points except Tara?
Nope.
No, not so far.
Show number 9: inspirational sitcom about a wholesome teen musician who wants to use her music to help people, starting with her own small California town. 50 episodes on BYU TV.
Oh, sure. That's Brigham Young University's network.
Mm, of course.
Yes. Right.
Is this show called A, Holly Hobby, B, Sarasota Flats, C, Victory Bell's Chorus, or of course, D, Dan just made this whole thing up. Andrew has locked in. Sarah has been shot by a sniper. Oh, there she is. Tara,
Sarah Witches. Is here.
All right, we are to Sarah first.
C.
Victory Bell's Chorus. Andrew.
A.
Holly Hobby. Tara.
Yeah, I'm going to say A as well.
Holly Hobby is the correct answer. Yes.
Hey.
How did we get from the 70s girl in a bonnet to musician in a small California town?
Same way Dora the Explorer is a teenager who's snatched now.
All right. All right, guys, this is not a repeat. Puppet-based series about two brothers, one who always does what his wise dad says and one who doesn't. They have adventures with talking animals, including the snake, who's always tried to get them to do bad things, and learn moral lessons narrated by prop comic Gallagher, Well, Gallagher 2, the brother of the better known one. It's a whole thing. Anyways, 8 episodes on Redeem TV. Is this show called Cain is Abel? B, Lessons from the Garden. C, The New Adventures of Goofus and Gallant. D, Dan Made This Up. Cain is Abel. Lessons from the Garden. New Adventures. Dan Made This Up. All right, everybody is locked in. We are to Andrew. No, yes, maybe. No, we're to Sarah first.
Didn't I just go
first?
Yeah,
I don't know. I fucked it up. Let's just go with it.
Okay. Right. I am torn, much as Cain and Abel were apart.
Yeah.
But I must say D.
D, Dan Made This Up. All right, Andrew.
D as well.
D and Tara.
B.
B?
B. B as B. In boy.
All right, the answer.
B as in boy, I'm not confident.
Dan Made That Up. So points for Sarah and Andrew, 2 each.
Good job.
Woo.
Cain is Abel is very good.
Pretty good.
It's the exclamation point that really makes it.
Multi-generational family drama about a clan of ranchers with frequent flashbacks to the heyday of the grandfather whose exploit decades ago resonate with the problems faced by the family today. 22 episodes on Great American Family. Is that show called Faith of Our Fathers, B, Great Stone Ranch, C, Lives of the Saints, or D, Dan Made That Up? Andrew locked in, Tara's locked in, Sarah is locked in. Let's go to Andrew first. What's your answer here?
I'm going to say A.
A, Faith of Our Fathers, Tara.
B, Great Stone Ranch.
And Sarah.
C, Lives of the Saints.
Oof. All right. Well, guys, you got 3 out of the 4. Somebody surely knows. Of course not. Dan Made That Up. No correct answer.
Damn it.
All right, this is going to take us soon to our score break. It is a documentary reality show. Okay. Following a prosthetics expert who helps family pets that have lost a limb. 53 episodes on BYU TV. Is that show called Save the Cat? B, The Real Dog Walker. C, The Wizard of Paws. Or D, Dan Made That Show Up? Everybody's thinking. Everybody is already locked in. All right, let's go to Tara first.
C, The Wizard of Paws.
All right, Sarah.
C for concur. It's The Wizard of Paws.
And Andrew.
Yes, C because that's the one I want the most.
You are all correct.
Yay!
It is The Wizard of Paws. And that means it's time for a score break, please.
Okay. Sarah has 3. Andrew has 4. I have 7. So it's closing up.
All right. Very good. Let's get back into it. Tween adventure show about a modern teen who accidentally awakens a princess that's been asleep for 1,000 years and has to fight ancient evils that have woken along with her. 51 episodes on Brigham Young University TV. Is that show called Camelot, Idaho? Dwight in Shining Armor? Knights of the Dinner Table? Or D, Dan Made It Up? So once again, A, Camelot, Idaho. B, Dwight in Shining Armor. C, Knights of the Dinner Table. D, Dan Made That Shit Up. Everybody's locked in. Let's go to Sarah.
A.
A, Camelot, Idaho. Andrew.
C.
Knights of the Dinner Table. Tara.
I'm also going to go A, Camelot, Idaho.
You are all incorrect. Dan did not make this up. It is Dwight in Shining Armor.
<That's>...
You guys are bad at this.
All right. Oh my God.
After Dead Sea Squirrels, I would have opened my mind to all possibilities.
No, it is bad. We are just here enduring it.
According to Dan, poorly animated series about a group of birds going on field trips to learn more about nature and faith. Mm. 20 episodes on Redeem TV. Is this show called A, Don't Be a Chicken? B, The Lost Riches? C, Owl Gories? Or D, Dan Made This Up? Andrew's immediately locked in. Tara and Sarah are now there too. Let's go to Andrew first.
I think this is D.
D, Dan Made It Up. Tara?
I also think it's a D.
Dan made it up. Sarah?
Allegories, sorry.
Of course, it is allegories.
No, wow, good job.
Oh, shit.
Nicely done. All right. Comedian and musician Kirby Hayborn travels the country volunteering with nonprofits all over the United States. 61 episodes on BYU TV. Is that show called A, God's Love, Kirby Delivers, B, Making Good, C, Mission, Road Trip, or D, Dan Made It Up? We are back to Tara to start us off.
Okay.
All right, everybody's locked in. Go ahead, Tara.
I'll say C, Mission:Road Trip.
Mission:Road Trip. Sarah?
Emphasis on the colon, but I agree with Tara. It's C.
All right, and Andrew?
I'm going to say B.
B, Making Good. Andrew is correct. It is Making Good. 1 point for you. All right, getting towards the end here. Here we go. Live action tween adventure series about a modern kid who finds himself transported back in time where he helps the first settlers in America, the Lost Tribe of Israel, who built a glorious civilization hundreds of years ago but are threatened by evil locals. 64 episodes on Brigham Young University TV. Is that show called A, The 13th Tribe, B, John Prester and the Lost City, C, Leo and the Lamanites, D, Dan Made This Up? All right, let's everybody lock in here. Yes, yes, yes. All right, Sarah, let's get your answer first, please.
C, Lamanites.
Okay. Andrew?
C, Leo and the Lamanites.
Okay, Tara?
I mean, for the sake of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I'm going to hope and pray it is D. Dan Made This Up.
Dan made that up. That is correct, yes.
Oh, God.
Evil locals was a nice touch.
Alas, very plausible.
Mm.
This is question 17.
It's pretty cool.
Andrea Logan White and Laura Giuliani showcase crafts you can build with your whole family and talk about the role of faith and how they deal with the challenges of being a mom. 6 episodes on Great American Pure Flix.
Only 6?
Is that show called A, Crafty Blonde Mums, B, Faithfully Yours, C, Jesus Was a Carpenter, or D, Dan Made This Up? Everybody is quickly locked in. Let's go to Andrew for our first guess.
Show me A, Crafty Blonde Mums.
All right, Tara?
I'm going to say B, Faithfully Yours.
And Sarah?
For the record, I heard you say Crappy Blonde Moms, which really gave me a lift. Yeah. That is not my answer. However, it's B, Faithfully Yours.
All right. We have a correct answer. It is from Andrew, Crappy Blonde Moms.
God.
Nicely done. After being released from prison, an ex-member of a biker gang tracks down his former fiance, where he helps her restore her ranch, which is on the verge of failure. But what happens when his gang shows up? 6 episodes on Great American Pure Flix. Is this show called Chains of the Heart, B, Sons of Thunder, Redemption, C, When Ride the Angels, or D, Dan Made This Up? All right, everybody is locked in except for Tara, who now joins us. Let's start with Tara. What is your guess for the title here?
Dan Made This Up.
Dan Made It Up. All right, Sarah.
Yeah, this says the that ozone whiff of Casino. I'm saying D.
All right, Andrew.
I'm going to go with C.
C, When Ride the Angels. It is not Chains of the Heart. Sorry to say, it is not When Ride the Angels. And Dan did not make this up.
My
it is B,
God.
Sons of Thunder, Redemption.
Wow.
I
got to get me a Great American Pure Flix subscription. I know.
We're missing out.
Yeah.
Here is our last triptych of questions. It starts with question 19. It's like Sex in the City without any sex, and not in a city where friends Lizzie, Eleanor, and Marianne, and Emma support each other through the tribulations of life and romance. We've got 10 episodes on Great American Pure Flix. Is this show called A, Ostentatious, mm-hmm. B, Ladies Who Lunch, C, Single Ladies Book Club, or D, Dan Made This Whole Thing Up? Everybody's locked in. Let's go to Sarah for our first guests.
Dan made this up.
Dan made it up. Andrew?
D, yeah.
Dan made it up. Tara?
I think it might be C, Single Ladies Book Club.
All right, let's find out. It is not Ladies Who Lunch. It is not Single Ladies Book Club. Dan did not make this up.
Come on, universe.
This is Ostentatious. As in,
they're all the names of Austin heroines.
That's right. There we go. Tara figures it out too late.
I really reject God now.
Get in line. All right, lady.
Here's our penultimate.
Okay.
Like Highway to Heaven or Touched by an Angel, except more so as Jesus himself shows up to help people through their crises of life and faith. Based on a film series, 16 episodes on Great American Pure Flix. Is this show called A, The Encounter, B, God's Not Dead, The Series, C, I Carried You, or D, Dan Made It Up? All right. Waiting for Sarah to lock in. Fuck. She's thinking. She's locked in. All right. Here we go. Andrew, what do you got?
I think C.
All right. He thinks C, I Carried You. Tara?
I was so torn between two, but I'm going to say A, The Encounter.
A, The Encounter. Sarah?
Yeah, I got to go Encounter.
Encounter. The correct answer, yes. That is The Encounter. All right. This is the last question, so I would like to hear the good news.
Well, first of all, he is risen.
Yeah, thank you.
Secondly, Sarah has 5, Andrew has 6, I have 10.
All right, let's get to it. Last question. Dan, once again, saying this is poorly animated series about a boy obsessed with insects who finds a magic medallion that lets him shrink down and take part in the epic adventures going on in his own yard, as well as witnessing the glory of God, etc., etc. Features the voice talents of the kid from Heaven Is For Real, 36 episodes on Redeem TV. Is this A, Getting Antsy, B, Lessons from the Garden, D, Judah and the Maccabees?
Oh, come on.
Or D, Dan Made It Up.
This is just...
All right. For this last one, let's all say it together just for shits and giggles. All right. 3, 2, 1, by letter.
B.
Okay. 2 D's, and those 2 D's are correct.
Oh, good job, guys.
All right. Dan made that last one up. That is regulation scores, please.
Okay. Sarah finished with 5. Andrew had 8. I had 12.
All right. That was super fun.
Dan, you are so sick. I look forward to telling you that to your face when we see you here next week.
Lake of Fire.
I got 2 tiebreakers. I want to play them because they're different types of questions and they're fun. And one speaks to what Andrew is going to be doing when he gets off this call, which is starting to subscribe to these channels.
Yes.
Here we go. Suppose you wanted to subscribe to all 5 of the services mentioned in this quiz. How much would it set you back every month at current full rates, non-premium plans? Ooh. Popular pricing-based game show rules apply here. So closest without going over wins, dollars, and cents. Tara?
I'm going to say $47.
47. Sarah?
44.
Andrew?
49.
47, 44, 49. Sarah DeBunting is the closest.
Hey!
She wins the stew meal for future use. That would have set you back $30.97. Here's a little fact from Dan Casino. Redeem TV is free, but they recommend a $5 a month donation, which Dan will not pay. Right, here's our second tiebreaker. One of the most successful faith-based shows in recent years is The Chosen, discussed right here on this show, a drama about the life of Christ. It is available on multiple platforms, funded by crowdfunding, with some episodes released in theaters. Thus far, there have been 8 episodes or specials of The Chosen released in theaters. What's the total domestic box office for these? Again, Price is Right rules apply. We're talking in millions of dollars. We're going to let Sarah go first.
33.
Andrew?
$200 million.
Andrew guesses right. $200 million. Tara?
I'm going to say $133 million.
Sarah D. Bunting takes this one too.
Good job, Sarah.
Thou shalt not steal meal.
But you were close. I think if we were playing to the pin, Tara would have won, but we're not. $103.9 million at the box office for those specials at the theaters. Amazing. All right, that is it. Much. Thank you very much, Dan. What a weirdo you are. Oops.
Tara.
Me.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We enrolled to Starfleet Academy with an elective in Chicken Origami before going around the dial with stops at Ponies, De Diplomat, Invincible, High Potential, and Shining Veil. Enough of us said I do to Tara's What We Do in the Shadows wedding cannon pitch. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan Casino. Next up, it's A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms on this Friday's Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
it can't be turkeys,
Sarah D. Bunting,
and also with you,
and Andrew Cunningham.
Yeah, beam me out of here.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
I can just not say anything.
Well, you could try.